Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Eerie Encounters, Volume 1, Story 1. My experience occurred in Clarksville, Tennessee in the fall of 1995. I was still in the military and had just been transferred there from Alaska. I met two friends, Bill and Dave, through a friend who wanted to go and get some firewood. When I first went to where Bill and Dave lived, it was a rural area bordering Cross Creeks National Wildlife Refuge in Indian Mound, Tennessee. Most of the land was for sale around them, and it was owned for years by a paper company and bought up by another company that I purchased 5 acres from. At that time, I think there were 4 or 5 trailers in the hollow. We spent a lot of time out there getting firewood and talking with Bill and Dave once we purchased the 5 acres. I was out there just about every other weekend hunting and fishing. The first few years it was quiet, and nothing really happened. I was deployed during that time and missed most of the late hunting seasons. We got on the subject of Bigfoot one day, and Dave looked at me and said, "Maybe that's the crazy hillbillies I kept seeing when we first moved out here." I guess he would see things running on the ridge above them when they first moved to their property. He told me about nights when something would be above their trailer growling at them just out of sight from the back porch. We also noted that the dogs refused to go into the woods during these events. In late fall of 1997, I was finally able to hunt the whole deer season and had the whole hollow to myself during the weekdays. I hunted on Fort Campbell during the weekends when I could, but the weekdays I was out of my land and the surrounding land. I would park at Bill or Dave's house and walk to my property just down the road or through the woods. It depended on which way the winds blew most of the time. I would take the road, then cut uphill to my deer stand. I started to get the feeling of being watched, and something wasn't right. I could tell the deer disappeared, and when I would see them, they acted nervous and stayed in large groups. Sometimes I would see 30 or 40 together and always running flat out from the ridge across the street onto my property and straight over the top, never stopping. Then the stalking started. I noticed something following me back to my truck. It would come in about an hour before dark, stay just far enough away so I could never get a good look at it. But it was there. I heard it following me off my property, just far enough back as not to be seen. But I never felt threatened. I think it was more of a game and curiosity than anything else. I did notice the deer would not appear or make their mad dash across my land on the nights I was being followed. I lost 2 deer that year. One was during bow season, the other during muzzle loading season. Both were hit with good kill shots, and I tracked the blood trails to the spots they died at and found nothing but blood and a little disturbed area. It was as if they had been picked up and carried away. No drag marks or anything out of the ordinary. I had acorns and sticks thrown at me twice while I was in my deer stand, and a couple more times while I was stalking around. There was a spur with a thicket on it. The acorns and sticks would come from that direction. Also, I noticed dead trees had a habit of falling over a lot on calm days. It became a game of sorts, but never threatening. I would leave my deer stand in the tree if I was coming back the next morning, and one morning I returned early before sunrise, and when I got to the tree, the one that my stand was in, it had been pushed up the tree about 12 feet off the ground. That kind of surprised me, but what can you do if you say anything? People think you're crazy or won't let you hunt on their land. So I just chalked it to experience and carried the stand in and out. I made friends with a man who was born and raised in the area. He was in his late 80s. His family farm wasn't far from where my land was at. We would talk a lot about my hunting, and I asked if he had seen anything out of the ordinary. He told me that when he was young, there was a white ape running around on his family's land. They were tobacco farmers, and he'd seen it, but he was very young at the time and couldn't remember much except it scared him. He told me about a time that he and a friend went down to the Cumberland River to fish one evening, and something was making, in his words, such a ruckus that they got scared and left the area and never returned. He said the trees were swaying, and it was a screaming. I told him about what I felt, you know, like being watched, and what happened to me, the acorn sticks and my tree stand, and he got the biggest grin on his face. I would say nothing more than strange things happen. Sadly, he died not long after that conversation. I started hunting across the street on other people's property off and on during those years. Most was private property and some belonged to Westvaco Paper Company. I tried to hunt during the off parts of the season, weekdays, because during the weekend hunters were out in force. Most people in the area liked having me around because I would run off the hunters without permission. One lady in particular always had something to say about me hunting on her land and that I didn't have permission to hunt hers. It seemed I was always blamed when she saw someone on her land chasing deer. I look back at it now, and the deer would always run across her land to my land, and who or what did she see chasing the deer? I knew the boundaries and stayed away from her land, but I was blamed just because I was the only one out there. 95% of the time, I was on my side of the road and my land, and I knew I was allowed to hunt there. I hunted her side of the road during the late rifle season in 99. It was about 4 a.m. when I got there. I couldn't get to sleep and really didn't realize how early I had left that morning. I parked my truck and waited till about an hour before sunrise and started to walk the ridge back behind another friend's property. I had found a lot of scrapes and rubs on the ridge and was going to a giant tree where I knew I could see a good distance down the ridge line. The weather was perfect, about 40 degrees, no wind, no clouds, and the stars were bright enough to light up the area. I got to my spot and sat down with my back to the tree. I was only there about 10 minutes, in perfect quiet, no sounds whatsoever, when something roared, screamed. It felt like it was right next to me, but it was about 100 yards downhill in a thicket. I was in a state of shock. Everything hit me at once. What was it? Where is it? Where is it going? I was sitting down, but went from a sitting position to standing instantly. I had a gun, Winchester 338, but knew it was useless. Whatever it was, sounded big. When it roared and screamed, the only way I can describe it, it took off like a bull moose charging through the woods, taking out everything in its path. I can remember it was on 2 feet that I could tell right off. It stayed in the thicket, running from my right until it was in front of me about 100 to 150 yards and stopped, roaring, screaming again, and took off at a dead run over the ridge and down into the gully, staying in the thicket the whole time. I could hear it running all the way down to the bottom. It was a steady thud, thud, thud as its feet hit the ground. When it got to the bottom, I figured it was gone, but it roared and screamed and started climbing the hill next over. I could hear it going up, and when I got to the top, it stopped and roared and screamed again and went over that hill. I was in shock. Never did I expect that to happen to me. Not in Tennessee, maybe Alaska, not Tennessee. I left the area, went to my truck expecting to see that my hair had turned white from nearly being scared to death, but it hadn't. I did realize one thing. No bullets were in the chamber of my gun. I forgot to put one in the way to my tree. I had 3 in the magazine, but none chambered. I went back during the daytime a few days later, walked back to the tree I was sitting at. It was a nice day, and I decided to go down to the spot the roar came from, but it was too thick to walk into, so I walked the edge the same way it ran. It was in a thicket. I could not even navigate thorn bushes. Everything was a tangle of vines and bushes. I walked the edges of the thicket, and it took me over 3.5 hours to climb down and up to the spot I last heard it roar and scream from. It took a minute at the most for that thing to navigate that thicket at a run in the dark. One night, just as the sun was setting, I was in my tree stand and heard a deer coming up a small draw at a full run. They ran up and over the ridge, heading straight towards my property after they passed it. Quieted down, and I heard a high-pitched gurgling noise, like talking, but not really. It continued for a few minutes, then stopped. I figured it was bucks and rut, but now that I think about it, it was out of the ordinary. I've never heard that sound before or after that night. It wasn't a normal sound. The next year, 2000, was a good year. I was hunting private property at the other end of the same ridge. The property was cornered on two sides by the Cross Creeks National Wildlife Refuge. I had an old tree stand that was left years ago and about 20 feet up. It was across from Bill and Dave's house, so I could park and walk to it in 10 minutes. I shot a buck and followed the blood trail where I found it went down, but it was gone, just like the other two times before. A week into hunting, I got the feeling of being watched, and it continued for a few days. Then one evening I heard a snap, like a branch breaking, then another, and so on. For over an hour it went on, and I thought it might be a buck in the thicket. After an hour, it started to get to me that the branches were too big to be snapped by a buck and rut. It was sounding more like a tree being broken in half. So I climbed down and looked around, never left the clearing, but saw nothing. I did get the feeling of stay away when I looked or moved toward the area the noises came from. I started heading back to my truck and something started to follow me, just back in the wood line, out of sight. I took off at a dead run all the way back. When I got to my truck, Dave was standing there looking at me like I was crazy. He'd been watching me run and asked what was wrong. I told him. He just looked at me. I went back up there after the season ended, 3 days later, to the spot the branches were broken at. I found them all sapling trees, 4 to 5 inches round, snapped in half. Funny thing is, they were all snapped over 8 feet up. I couldn't reach any of them. I'm 5'9". There was no wind on or after that day I was hunting. I can add that I looked for footprints, but the ground cover was thick leaf covering and I never found any prints. The woods that all happened in was last logged about 30 years ago. There's a lot of abandoned homes, farms, barns in the area with old fruit trees in and around those areas. The area was full of oak trees and thickets, very hilly with water close by. I found some small caves back on the wildlife refuge, but they're small, only going in about 10 or 12 feet. I can't remember smelling anything out of the ordinary, but during that time of the year, the tobacco smoke houses are going and the hollow always smells like smoke. All of my experience took place in November, December. Never had anything happen during the summer months. I did find a few deer kills that didn't look right. One was on my property and it was more of a bloodbath than anything else. It was spread around a 20-foot area, blood everywhere, and looked like it had been ripped to pieces. Scavengers had been there before me when I found that it was a day or two old. I found two does, nothing wrong with them, no arrows or bullet holes, just off the trails, dead. I think their necks were broken. After 2000, I was deployed with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, so hunting was out of the question. I retired in 2005 from the Army and haven't been back since. Dave has since passed away in 2004. Bill still lives out there, but we have little in communication, so I guess a lot of people are building houses out there and the area has changed a lot since then. I tried to think about everything that I went through, and I know some might think I'm crazy, but it all happened. I was there. I know what I felt and heard, and the occasional glimpses of something moving around that didn't fit in. Next story. This occurred around 1980, 1981. My girlfriend and I arrived at Wadham Lake early one evening. After parking, we hiked down a forested trail to the lake, which sits in a valley 300 or 400 feet below the road. On the trail down, we had passed several campsites with young, noisy campers drinking and playing boomboxes. The lake is surrounded by forest and thick brush. A trail circled the lake through the thick brush with clearings every couple hundred feet, each with a fire ring for camping. We followed the trail to the opposite side of the lake where there were no campers, found a clearing, and set up camp. We were dismayed when, sometime after dark, another group of young campers arrived at the next clearing, about 100 yards down the trail, and set up camp. They began to drink and carry on playing music until close to midnight. When they finally quieted down, we were able to crawl into our dome tent and go to sleep. Sometime later, I was awakened by very heavy footfalls coming down the trail toward our camp. As I lay there on a thin mat, I could actually feel ground tremors as this thing got closer. Wide awake and quite alarmed, I lay there unmoving and listening as a footfall suddenly became much lighter, as if it was walking on tiptoes. Yes, it was just outside the tent. We had some dishes soaking in the lake, maybe 20 feet away, and I heard them clinking as if something was messing with them. I then heard it as it headed off down the trail in the opposite direction from which it had come, this time heading toward the campsite occupied by the noisy teenagers. Once again, the footfalls seemed to get heavier as they receded in the distance. 5 or 10 minutes later, we heard a young girl scream, followed by men yelling, all coming from the campsite where the teenagers were. It soon quieted down, and we went to sleep. I woke at dawn, made coffee, and headed down the trail to the teenagers' campsite to ask them about our nighttime visitor, only to find their campsite empty. They must have left real early. While sleeping in the open on the shores of Green Lake in the Three Sisters Wilderness, I once heard a herd of elk approach to within a few feet to drink from the lake. I sat up and they scattered in every direction. What we heard at Wadham Lake was different. Definitely walking on two legs. It was either a very heavy person or I don't know what. Next story. Back in the winter of 2001, my youngest son and I were on our way from Boise, Idaho to Medford, Oregon. We had taken a car trailer to his old place in Boise in order to haul his non-running Jeep to his new place in Medford. We hit an area of heavy snow and the southern Cascades around 2 a.m. It took 45 minutes or so to get down the mountain. We had, of course, been drinking coffee to stay alert. About 25 miles west of the pass, it became obvious that the last few quarts of coffee had to be drained. We stopped at a wide spot in the road near a summer tourist haunt. Was deserted in winter. There was a gas station and ice cream joint on the west side of the road, closed this time of year, and no town or settlement within 30 miles. This is tall timber country and unsettled. Across the road is a small parking area for the ice cream joint. It's paved and about 200 feet wide and 80 feet deep. I pulled in, and as I stepped out with a .45 on my hip, it occurred to me in a flash that grabbing the 590 Mossy would be good. As we walked to the far end of the area to be well off the road, the hair on my arms and the back of my neck stood on end. The area directly to our front was open with a depth of 50 yards and a width of 100 yards. The night was clear and cold, 8 to 10 inches of snow on the ground and with the moon almost full, so we could see quite well. I was standing there. My son was about 15 feet to my right. And then I saw, as if springing from the earth in front of us, across the open area, 10 or 12 creatures moving rapidly back and forth in a sort of a thatch weave pattern. These things, not human, men, whatever, were close to 7 feet tall, thin, bipedal with long arms, medium length, gray fur, and damn fast on their feet. I brought the shotgun up and slid the safety off, as my son was drawing his .45. I don't know if I can adequately explain the overwhelming feeling of menace, but here goes. I have been operating on pure instinct since I'd stepped from the pickup. The rotten feeling hit me a split second before the things arrived. The feeling, instinct, what, that we were prey and subject to a very bad death and to be slaughtered and eaten? Not a logical process, gut feeling, and massively overwhelming. As they were moving around in front of us, more appeared and mixed among them, all the while running about, fast in front of us. My son and I were backing up towards the truck. I would not present my back to them, and some of them peeled off right and left in encirclement movement. They were rolling in fast from the sides now. I could smell and feel their presence. We got to the truck, loaded on adrenaline and ready to kill, as we both knew we were in grave danger. We piled into the truck, locked the doors. I had my keys out and ready as my butt neared the seat. I had the engine lit, transmission and gear and gas pedal mashed in one motion. Adrenaline is great stuff. As we fled, yes, fled, something very close by let out an undulating scream of rage and pain. I believe one or more of the group had gotten really close to us in their pursuit, and I ran over the foot of one of them. Yeah, they were that close. We rolled onto the highway, and I told my son to watch the bed of the pickup as well as the trailer. He already was indexed to the rear with a shotgun. We hauled the ass for at least 20 miles before the feeling of great danger started to abate. The feeling that nailed both of us, as we discussed soon afterward, was one of being prey and soon to be slaughtered and eaten. I'm not easily led, and neither believe or disbelieve all the Bigfoot, ghost, and werewolf stuff. In fact, I'm skeptical. My son was speaking with a co-worker about 6 months later who'd grown up in Prospect, Oregon, about 30 miles south of Union Creek where the incident took place. He asked Jake if he had ever heard of any strange going on in the area. Jake went ashy white and pretty much retold the above tale. He said to avoid the place at night. A family friend, a 25-year retired cop, not given to flights of fancy and an excellent observer, had a tale very similar from a year before. I told my wife of this event, of course. She looked at me at the beginning as though I developed a third eyeball in the center of my forehead. That was from shock. She did believe me, but did not wish to hear any details. She said the tale gave her chills. Me too. As I think about it, the hair on the back of my neck and forearms is sticking up. I have not gone back to explore, and would not without a large group of shotgun and flamethrower-equipped men with me. My son and I are both sane, sober persons, and not taken to hysteria. We were very, very wide awake as things transpired. We saw and smelled what was there. As a sidebar, neither of us heard footfalls from the creatures. They were silent until I heard one as we were getting the hell out of there. To my knowledge, I've researched, there is nothing that matches these creatures unless one considers old legends and folk tales aware creatures. Next story. 1959, I was 22, and I was hitchhiking from Biggs, Oregon, down U.S. Highway 97 to Klamath Falls. About halfway through the trip, I was picked up by a man who asked if I planned to do any camping in the Cascades. I said, no. He said, good, because there are things up there that will kill you quick. I said, you mean grizzlies? Which I had seen in Yellowstone. No, he replied, not grizzlies. And he told me this story, which I'm paraphrasing. I used to work for a company that built logging roads. One day we got a report that one of our roads had washed out. I went out in my truck to find out what would be needed to fix it. About 3 or 4 miles from the highway, I noticed a rocky outcropping and something glinting in the sun. I was an amateur prospector, always looking for signs of a strike. I stopped my truck, took out my rock hammer, and walked up to the outcropping, which was about 10 feet high. I started chipping away at the rock, trying to get a sample. When I stopped hammering, I heard a clicking sound from the bushes across the road, about 60 feet away. It sounded like someone knocking two stones together. I wasn't afraid because I had a .45 on my hip. So I resumed chipping. When I stopped, I again heard the clicking sound, which was louder. I yelled toward the bushes, saying, "Come out and show yourself." I started chipping again, and suddenly, a stone the size of a grapefruit smashed into the rock face about 3 feet from my head. If it had hit me, it would have killed me. I dropped my hammer, pulled my .45, and picked up the stone, which was rolling toward the road. I tried to throw it back into the bushes, but it was so heavy, I could only toss it 7 feet. Scared and angry, I crossed the road, shouting curse words, and fired a shot in the air. At that point, I heard something moving rapidly through the bushes and fading away alongside the road. I continued watching in that direction, and suddenly there it was, a black, hairy, two-legged being, sort of bent over but moving fast. Then it was gone, just like that. I looked around the bushes and saw a few broken branches, but nothing else. But there was a terrible stink in the air. I got into my truck and drove back to the highway in a hurry. A couple of years later, I told a friend what happened, and he knew all about these creatures. He said they don't hurt people, which I didn't believe for a second, and the stone that was thrown in my direction was probably just a warning. He also said the creatures don't usually smell bad, but when they are mad or frightened, They spray some kind of stinky liquid like a skunk does. And that was it. I'd never heard of Bigfoot before that and did not believe the story, thinking he was pulling the leg of a dude from the east. But I pretended to believe him because he was giving me a free ride in his truck. It wasn't until many years later I began hearing reports about Bigfoot and remembered the story I heard in Oregon. I still wonder if it might be a hoax of some kind, but somehow I don't think it is. Next story. When I was a teenager in the late 1970s, we lived year-round in a remote area next to a large lake that was rapidly developing as a weekend getaway for urbanites at the time. The countryside was hilly and heavily wooded with streams and ravines. The hills have rock outcroppings and caves. By the time I was 14, I was roaming all around out there and often strayed miles from home. I can recall only one incident that spooked me personally. It would have been 1977. I was 15 years old and at least 3 miles from home, out hiking, and was working my way down a fairly steep decline, probably 50 degrees or more, on a day in late fall. This area has several large outcroppings and caves, and there were a few massive trees growing on the slope, and many smaller ones. What happened was all of a sudden, I got that proverbial tingling feeling at the back of my neck that I was being watched. Not only watched, but glared at. By that time in my life, I had already spent many days and nights out camping in the woods, and as I said, hiking, hunting, and fishing. I never had a sensation like this before. I glanced around a little, but I did not look up. Whatever or whoever it was, I did not want them to realize that I knew they were there. I felt like that might provoke an attack or something, as odd as that may sound. I had a hunting knife with me and put my hand on the hilt. I also found a sturdy stick to use as a club if needed. I quickly made my way down the rest of that slope. I knew that there was a forest trail at the bottom of it, and that the trail intersected a road a half mile away or so. When I reached that trail, something let out a reverberating yet somewhat high-pitched scream back up the hill, within 100 yards or so from where I was at. I didn't turn back to look. I just took off running. It let out another scream a few seconds later, but my impression was that it had not moved. As I said, the scream was fairly high-pitched, but had tremendous volume to it. It just seemed to reverberate all down the hillside. It was lower pitched and too throaty to be a bobcat, which I had heard many times in the past. We weren't supposed to have mountain lions anywhere near our area. And again, the sound seemed lower pitched than the screams I had heard them make on nature shows. But at the time, that is what I chalked it up as being most likely. I told my family and several of my friends about it. Anyhow, I never went back to that part of the woods without having a loaded firearm with me. A few years later, 1984, I related my story to an elderly 80-year-old lady who lived in this area her entire life. She had literally been born within a few miles of where this is located. She was from a large Native American family. She got an odd look on her face and a very serious tone in her voice, and told me I had encountered a skinwalker. She said that when she was a young girl, probably prior to 1920, she had a brother a few years older than her that came into their cabin one day very excited about having seen an animal he had never seen before. He had been out in the woods hunting squirrels. The best way to hunt squirrels is to stealthily make your way to an area with lots of large hickory trees, then stay very quiet, watching and listening for their movements. He said that was what he was doing when he caught a glimpse of something dark in one of the trees. He said at first he thought it was just a trick of light, because it seemed to be a shadow that had moved on its own. He stayed quiet and hidden and watched and listened. The shadow began moving some more and made its way down a tree trunk fairly quickly. He described it as being 4 feet tall, built like a human, but somewhat hunched over, covered in long, dark black-brown hair. When the thing reached the ground, the young man made some sound, perhaps a gasp or sigh. Suddenly it stood completely upright, moving its head slightly side to side, looking over his way. He described the face as being somewhat human-like, but covered with dark hair and with something of a protruding snout, and the eyes as being very large and light-colored. It had an extremely angry look, even menacing. The thing bolted behind the tree and was gone. A minute or so later, the young man heard a high-pitched scream coming from high up in the trees, which was answered by another scream that came from elsewhere. That was what spooked him and caused him to rapidly leave. After he told his story to his family, the parents got serious and very worried, and reminded and warned the children again about skinwalkers. They described them as being evil forest spirits, not as big as humans, but just as strong, and also cunning and very malicious. The skinwalkers are supposed to be masters of camouflage. Their dark coloration and long fur or hair allow them to hide in the shadows under the trees very effectively. Plus, they have a tendency to only come out at night. The young man saw this thing just shortly before sunset. The skinwalkers supposedly hate humans and will try to kill them if they can. Usually they target young children, leering them to stray away from their homes by mimicking the sound of a kitten or puppy, or sometimes mimicking the sound of a baby crying or kids laughing. If the skinwalkers can get a young child alone in the woods, they will strangle them. Another tactic is to get older children or even small adults alone and into water like a creek or pond. Then the skinwalkers will spring upon the victim and hold them under water, drowning them. The elderly lady said that their parents warned them that if they ever see a shadow move independently while out in the woods, you must keep your eyes down and pretend like you don't notice, but to go ahead and leave the area quickly, getting back to more lighted and open spaces. As an adult, I've heard and now researched a little about skinwalkers and realized that the term is generally used to describe myths of shapeshifters among Native Americans of the Southwest, like Navajos and Hopi. But I'm just telling you the story exactly as it was told to me. Again, this was in eastern Oklahoma back in about 1984, and describing an incident that would have occurred in the area around 1915 to 1920. When I was a young child, my parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents warned me and other kids in our family to never stray into the woods by ourselves, and especially not if we heard what we thought was a kitten or puppy. My family called it the Booger Man, or Child Catcher, and basically said that there was something out there that would kill young children if it could catch them alone, but never gave any more description than that it was big and dark. I realize that folks tell their children such things to scare the kids to keep them from wandering off and getting hurt or lost, but still, it makes you wonder if there might not be a kernel of truth behind these stories.